too many points. My God, it's just so much.
It's a silly question. Is there anything you want to talk about today?
I wouldn't even know where to start. There's so much going on now because I'm obviously talking to Germany. I'm talking to my friends in Germany. I'm talking to my family in Germany. So the Chancellor of Germany now declared that this time now official pre-war era. So it's now not potential war. They call it a pre-war.
How do they know that?
They're basically talking war all day.
Right.
And they're basically preparing everyone.
Usually, historically speaking, pre-war is something you retrospectively talk about. You go pre-war era because the war hadn't happened yet.
Yeah, it's totally.
But now they're like, oh yeah, when the war happens.
Yeah.
If, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's good.
Yeah, now that obviously one of the Biden admin staff is deciding to put Ukraine into the NATO, that's obviously.
Okay, because it's the thing that we know is the primary reason why Putin is at the start of the war, right? Is because of the NATO thing. And so they're like, yeah, let's do that.
Everything is just stirring up. Yeah. And on top of it, obviously, anyone who wants to listen to the last Brett Weinstein podcast
with
John Ryan about this famous pathologist.
Yeah.
About the, just when you think you know about what the vaccines are doing in terms of damage, listen to that podcast, which came out last week, which is the just beginning of April.
Yeah.
So, yeah, then you just, boom, there's a new awakening. The patterns they develop, because now they got 3 years of observation.
Yeah.
And they can see now that there's a foreign protein introduced into the body of those who receive the vaccines, and those develop into patterns. And now you've got new proteins in the body. And so proteins, as they're outlined in that podcast so well, is when you have an injury, the body immediately repairs the damage and uses the proteins derived from the body. And then you have a scar, and then eventually it's disappeared.
Mm.
But now you've got proteins in the body that actually will develop something new. And obviously, he talked about that there are all kind of toxic DNA traces, because when they did this vaccine, they rushed it so heavily. And then they took, obviously, from animals and things like that. And then they cut the sequences short in order to make things fit.
Yeah.
It's just incredible. However, obviously, from my perspective, from a Chinese medicine perspective, I knew all along that it's targeting the Jing, the kidney.
Yeah.
And because that's what DNA refers to in China, from a Chinese medicine perspective, it's the Jing. And it's an information that is partially cosmic and partially material from the body derived. So we called it the prenatal Jing, the postnatal Jing. So that's all affiliated with the information that is actually from the cosmic source, God source, or whatever you want to call it, that is actually instrumental for actually creating the body in the first place, because no one really knows exactly what's going on here.
No.
As Rupert Sheldrake, in the famous development of the morphogenetic field idea, has postulated that the protein that are produced in the cells of the hand are the same as in the toe, but it's not a toe that's growing on your hand.
No, that's right.
And so he postulated that there's a field around it, and the protein that are developed are actually put into a field. It's like you're blowing up a balloon, and whatever happens within that balloon obviously will be placed in conjunction with the constraint of the balloon. That's like the field. So you can't, whatever is within the balloon can't be outside the balloon.
Yep.
Yeah. And so the morphogenetic field idea is that there's an energy field which is like the balloon, and then all the biological processes within the balloon, actually then what they produce in terms of proteins in order to create something, will be put within that balloon. So you have the shape already created. So but now everything is just really in uproar, because there are new proteins now entering the body that no one really knows what to do about it yet.
Yeah. And this too, which is just it's like this, because I was just in the same podcast, and I didn't get to this point yet because I was already blown away. I had to almost pull over because I was trying to understand what they're talking about. But it's not only was this introducing this foreign substance, this stuff, and this hellbent directive to keep developing this platform, even now there's the safety signals have been triggered since day one into 2020, but that there's diet and lifestyle and all these other aspects already were almost weakening our body to begin with. So yeah, already, and the thing that they mentioned that I kind of was quite surprised, and we can talk about this too, is D3, what D3 actually is. And you also refer to it as a vitamin, where it's not actually a vitamin.
It's a pre-hormone.
Pre-hormone. I've never heard this before. This is, I mean, I've been taking D3 for years now, and this is the first time I've heard that. And also that one of the ways to disable that is to eat high fructose corn syrup and shitty food.
Yes.
And like 80% of the food in America is full of this stuff. So like, it's just, you know, it's so hard not to see some intention there, or just it's a series of unfortunate events or follies that it'd be so hard to see as accidental. It's amazing that from every angle, it was having someone who's going into this week already or eating foods that disable this basically hormone, pre-hormone. Then there's the injecting of some other substance. So we don't know what it does on the outside and into the body. And then all the other crazy practices of wearing masks and other things. And it just seems like this from every point of view, there's nothing that wasn't done poorly or wrong. And then it's so very hard to see it as an accident. And I'm struggling quite a lot with that. I'm kind of speechless. I wouldn't think I would be, but I don't want to sound naive about it, but a lot of people leapt to conclusions early on that, you know, this is a bioweapon, this is not intentional and this and that. And even through everything, it was so hard to believe that was done on purpose. It was like, well, and as he pointed out in that interview, he said that 99% of doctors aren't immunologists. They don't understand immunology and the immune system, which is also like, I get it, but also it's shocking to hear that. Where you go to a doctor and they're a specialist in a certain field, but they don't understand how the immune system works, or they have an individual speciality or a place they focus on, or they look at a certain aspect, oh, it must be your one, this one area here, and isolate. We talk a lot about what happens when you isolate things. You isolate a diet or isolate a certain aspect or isolate that, and you don't understand the whole, and therefore you don't understand how to fix it or what's going wrong. So there's this ignorance or just a lack of skill or understanding of how that whole system works. And then this all rolls out, and then they're telling us that this is the one-step solution to everything. So it just, yeah, I'm struggling formulating the words on what I think about that, but it's...
Yeah, we are.
It's pre-war talks. Yes, well, pre-war, it's war.
So when the German Chancellor said we are pre-war era, I nearly texted him and said, hey, you got it wrong. We are full in the war.
Right. Get rid of the pre.
It's the aspects of the physical world is colliding left, right, and center.
Yes.
And there's no, it's molecule is going crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And hitting each other and causing all kind of like free radicals and all kind of other spin-offs. And so it just, and therefore creating new vibration, new frequencies, and then you're trying to make sense of it and it doesn't add up anymore.
No, well, it's like putting everything in a cocktail shaker and then just,
just like
the gentle,
yeah.
But I think it's getting like
it's like the good old days when you do the party, you know, like someone has got an idea to do something, you know, after you've smoking copious amounts of pot and drinking a little bit of tequila,
right?
And then you're just going to put everything into a pot to see what happens,
right? Yeah,
you know, you're gonna
okay. Is this something that
that's what we did. Yeah, okay. That's
I didn't go to these kind of parties
back in the day. So you put
like the good old
put whatever you thought you put in kidney beans, oats.
Yeah, it sounds like a duffo or what do you call that, stews, where you just put everything.
Yeah, you put everything in there and see what happens, you know. Put something green in there, what you fall on the floor.
It could be grass, could be weed.
Yeah, and and put it all together. And then it turns into something that looks like a mixture. And then you heat it up so it looks official.
Yeah.
And then you put it into a bowl and eat it. But in the day, you know, you explore all kind of stuff to see what happens. And I think that's what we're experiencing now. It's just like, it's almost like what we, back in the day, did the crazy drug escapade. And in order to explore the madness of reality, now we actually see with our drugs outside.
Right. Looks about the same. Yeah, yeah.
And then at the same time, a few days ago, Germany finally made 50 grams of marijuana and hashish legal.
Legal.
They legalized marijuana. They realized. So you're not allowed to have 50 grams every day. And they did parties in the parliament. And although all the MPs were standing outside and people outside were smoking joints and it was televised all over the country, it was for a 2-day party. So whole Germany was just completely going up on smoke.
And is that, what do you think that's, is that because like fuck it, why not do that? Yeah. What do you think the...
Well, everything has gone so crazy, right. So why not legalize
this? Right, just, yeah. Let's just add that in.
Why not do that?
Yeah. Yeah. Or maybe just trying to like...
You can't save it anyway. It's too late.
Maybe it's trying to get everyone to chill out a little bit.
You know? Chill everyone out.
Well, it's like the whole oxygen masks in planes, and supposedly it's like, it doesn't matter. It's just to make you a bit high. So if you're going down, or someone has a bike club anyway. Yeah, like something to do with you losing oxygen.
Putting on the legal.
It's like, just try and chill for a bit before the plane crashes.
Chill, Scott.
It's like, it's for your own safety. It's like, no, it's just like, stop screaming while the, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so, it seems to be like when I heard that marijuana is legalizing, that Germany has not legalized, 25 you can carry with you in the day in the streets and 50 grams at home.
That's a lot. Yeah, what is that for, like how many joints is that?
Back in the day when we started, we got done with 3 grams.
3 grams?
Oh, yeah. A good friend of mine got thrown into jail just for 2 grams.
Okay, and this is...
Yeah, had 6 months jail.
Right.
So for me, as an ex-hippie and just really exploring the psychedelics of the world in Germany when it was so restricted with the laws, that was like unheard of. If someone would have said, you will see a day where there will be 50 grams legal. Like
25 times.
That's fine. 2 ounces. Totally fine. That's almost 2 ounces. So you can actually carry an ounce and go to the police station, roll it up and say, how are you going, mate?
Oh, they'll probably join in apparently by the sounds of it. Like, yeah, we got nothing to do anyway. It's all right.
Yeah. But the fact is that most of the MPs actually joined in.
Mm-hmm.
So just like...
This doesn't seem very German to me, but I don't know. Maybe I don't know much about Germany.
Yeah, that's why I'm sort of surprised. You know, while everything is just like another one of those factors where I was sort of scratching my head and saying, that doesn't seem to make any sense.
Yeah, it seems like nonsense. No sense is this sense.
Yeah, there's got so many problems going on and so many challenges, and I spent like years legalizing, which is a good idea anyway, because you got it. It's bullshit.
It is crazy, yeah, the amount of crazy. Like this war on drugs.
Yeah, yeah. It's just,
done your own.
I've never seen any good from that.
No,
you know,
no,
because if you want to smoke, you smoke. You know, I never bothered about the law. You know, back in the day, if I made it happen, and you know, I smuggled it into jails and things like that because my friends didn't have it in jail, so I made sure they're gonna have some good stuff. And, you know, so I was fully aware that this is not an accepted behavior pattern in Germany to smuggle you into the jail. But that's what you do, because you just forget the law and you transcend the law. So people understand that you really are motivated from within, yeah?
Yeah.
And then you always make it happen. Like smuggling is like an incredible skill, because you really have to go into your inner world, and then you just, when you pass the customs or the police officers or whatever, you have to be really in an inner state.
Yeah, like a yogi practice.
Yeah, full on.
Smuggling.
You're in a full on, some sort of ninja state, yeah?
Yeah.
And so the internal path became very evident during those practices, which later was a benefit to me,
yeah.
You know, because when I got into Chinese medicine, I had to do the pulse diagnostics and learning all kind of other skills that needed to transcend the references of the external. I had to go and rely on what is from within.
Yep.
Then actually those practices actually had some sort of contributing factor in order to master this. So I found it actually worked good in that regard, yeah. So, but like when I was a hippie and I was an outcast and I was roaming the streets and having, you know, fighting cops in demonstrations. And we were the mad people, and we were often in the newspapers, and we were looked at the mad people. And now, like, I'm just so organized in my life with every day. And I look at them and said, I was actually never mad.
Yeah.
You guys are mad.
Right. Yeah. Well, I always wonder that. Like, what is crazy? You mean? You look back and you go, that was a crazy talk, a crazy behavior. And you go, oh, that was actually true.
Because I smoked some pot, I was mad. Yeah. Just because I had my VW van covered in 50 colors, it was considered mad. And now what you see, what the external world is doing, that's beyond.
Well, and encouraging that and then saying you're mad if you don't accept it, or you go against it. You're weird, or you're too formal or old-fashioned or whatever, you know?
Yeah. So we have to actually define the word mad.
That's probably
good. Maybe time to
madness.
To find a new definition.
But even like, because it's like the psychosis, right? But even psychosis is a different, it's related, right? But that's a more of a pathological description, which is so broad, though. Like, if you're psychotic or psychotic behavior, everyone knows what that means, more or less. But then I've had a lot of experience with sort of mental illness in my family and sort of bipolarity and schizoaffective and those kind of things. But a lot of those, I know a lot of creative people, musicians who were diagnosed bipolar, like quite common, you know, Einstein, all these really brilliant people. And that's like, you know, they're crazy or can't regulate, you know, it's I'm sure there's a whole discussion there, obviously, on Chinese medicine and what that actually
means. Oh, yeah.
Because
you can't have an incredible gift without the corresponding liability.
Yeah.
It's yin and yang.
Yeah.
So if you are born with a very specific gift, there's also somewhere an incredible weakness.
Yeah.
Liability.
Yeah.
And so it's not much point focusing on strengthening your gift. You've got to focus on your weakness.
Yeah.
And
this is something you don't ever hear. You never hear this in, I don't know, motivational, or maybe you do. I don't know much about motivational culture or Western culture, or, you know, it's quite often, it is more maybe focused on building up strengths than using the weakness as a starting point, I think.
Yeah.
It seems like avoiding weakness, avoiding what's weak, or being safe, or being careful, don't damage that, and focusing on strengths is more common, maybe.
Yeah.
But what I've, you know, learned from you in the past few years, especially, is that, you know, your weakness is your strength. Like, I started out with asthma and other issues and a lot of self-esteem issues and things, and that was like a starting point. Without that starting point, there's nothing to work on. There's nothing to step on. Because if you wake up and you feel great or you're a happy person, then there's no way to, you know, what are you going to work on? There's nothing to work on, right? So once you have something a challenge to work on, or a problem, I call it a problem, like...
Yeah, from a Chinese medicine perspective, it's very straightforward. Like, the soul needs to evolve. So when we were born, according to Chinese medicine, there was within us the drive to expand. And there was within it what the idea that I can get a grip of myself as long as I keep evolving.
Yeah.
So the need to evolve is directly affiliated with actually understanding the self. So then I've got different ways of naming it, which is why the word self in Chinese medicine is not isolated by itself, even possible to be used.
Yeah.
It's a shen jing. Jin sheng is like, that means there's the awareness of the self in conjunction with the jing, which is the kidney. And the kidney is the fundamental force for development.
Yeah.
So the self actually can only exist if it develops itself.
The self has to develop itself.
Yes. So as soon as you don't develop yourself, then you actually don't experience yourself as self, and now it goes into a non-self.
That sounds a bit selfish.
Yeah.
Right. Let's do that again. All right. So
If you don't develop the self, then you don't have the support from the jing, from the kidney, the water.
Yeah.
So now the self is by itself, and that can't exist by itself. So it actually needs the perception of being it evolving itself. And so this is where what we are always the happiest if we tackle a challenge.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then after the challenge, so what?
It says
there's a little bit of great moment.
It's fine.
Yeah.
It's kind of, I experience that more as time goes on, that I finish something and it's just kind of, I don't, you know, dwell on it or rest on it.
Yeah.
It's a bit like, okay, well, okay.
That's why we have so much madness now.
Right.
Because the self is without the self.
That sounds crazy.
Because the self is without the jing. Yeah, it's without the development. Because, like, from a Chinese medicine perspective, it all comes down to the one fact. I need to always be aware every moment, what I do now, how does it impact on the development of my soul?
Right.
Because the only thing we know for sure is death.
That's the only thing. Yeah.
Like, when someone is not really sure what's going on, I said, look, it's very simple. You will die.
Yep.
It's not a comforting thing to say, man.
Well, that's true, though. In a world where it's very hard to...
It brings you back to reality.
Yeah, it's very hard to get to the truth. We know, at least from the outside. Like, our experience of death is often usually with someone else dying.
Yeah.
Oh, that person is no longer here. But when we die, it's probably quite a different experience.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you know, maybe it's not something you even think about. You're like, oh, cool, that's done. But I don't know, maybe it's not. You know, it's like the end of a project.
I don't think it would be like that. Oh, okay, it's done. Okay. Shit, I didn't expect it. I've seen it will be that's like that waking up from a dream.
Okay.
That suddenly whoop, and then we just I didn't do this.
When you wake up from a dream, you're like, that was really weird.
Yeah.
What's that about? What are those people doing there? What's it about? Yeah.
But the fact is that we're moving towards it.
Yeah.
And therefore, it is of importance to always look, everything we do, we need to look into how does it actually impact on my soul? So without it actually connecting to the soul in terms of where is it connected to the development of the soul, it's actually moving away from being yourself and into no self. And we see a lot of what we have seen over the last 3 decades is that move towards becoming successful, having lots of material gains. I mean, there's more people now having money than ever before. There's people having more goods than ever before. I mean, look at what we have. It's incredible. Like we couldn't imagine that 30 years ago. Yeah. So obviously that takes over.
Yeah.
But then whatever we gain and whatever we work on in that regard, you know, how does it benefit the soul?
Mm.
You know, when you get trapped, like I've seen so many of my clients are so trapped in it because with the mortgages, you know, so with the houses. So 30 years ago, 20 years ago, they bought a house and obviously the values went up. Oh, we're going to get a different house. Yeah. And then bang, and suddenly it's got 4 or 5 whole houses.
Yep.
And then the interest rate went up.
Yep.
And then the stress factor began. And then, boom, this financial overcommitment started.
Yep.
And now you have no idea to think about the soul.
No.
So if someone comes up and said, look, what you're doing is the most important thing is to look at that. How does it impact your soul? They're not going to tell you to fuck off.
Yeah. I mean, they can't think that clearly.
Yeah. It's just like irritating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's like there's the things that seemingly bring you happiness, like the car or whatever, you know, but that I cannot see that being like soul nourishing. You know, you go, like, there's those levels of like happiness or it's great or I feel, or it's a sense of accomplishment. I don't know, because I never really crave new things or nice things. I move so much that material goods at a young age were almost irrelevant. Like we'd get something and then a year later we move and sell it all at a garage sale and move to the next place and go to someone else's garage sale and buy other stuff. And then so I was very like, was owning things and even being in the same space for very long was just meant nothing. So any people who like, you know, parents live in the same house since they were a kid, they have their bedroom still from when they're, you know, their same bed and the posters on the wall from when they were a teenager. And I have no concept of that. So therefore my attachment to owning objects or spending a lot of money on external things other than the technology I needed to do my job, having more than I needed, like another extra car, or I know people, you know, collect motorbikes or collect things, but if I couldn't use it, I wouldn't see a point in owning it because it's going to sit there. It's like another thing to have. So I was never really be happy if I get that new car or differently. Like I'll probably enjoy it, but also like I could see a different priority or different, like I'm not, some reason just never really appealed to me, which is considering I'm an industrial design, which is about making stuff. It's like new stuff. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of designers who like, they love stuff. So it's like, I'll get the new kettle, the new this or new that, or upgrade that because it's beautiful. That never appealed to me because it was a
To me, that's accumulation. Two different things. Yeah, there's two different things. Like, for example, if I look at an engineer at Ferrari, I believe many of them are passionate about the engine, the acceleration, the shape, the form. Yeah. So they, in many ways, are impacting on their soul because they actually they are motivated from within in order to explore that. And there will be a buyer who's motivated from within to actually explore that, what they have designed.
Yeah.
And there's a direct communication between the two. But what happens to those who buy the Ferrari for status?
Which is,
in that moment, it's not impacting on the soul anymore. It's impacting on the neighbor. So it's impacting. So then that moment, you're creating a no self. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not affiliated with the kidney jing, which is affiliated with the soul develop itself.
Yeah.
I mean, so the soul will not develop how the neighbor perceives you.
Yeah. Well, there's people who Ferrari doesn't even to announce the new model. They're already on the list. So they'll go to this few hundred people, 1,000 people in the world and say, there's a new Ferrari. Are you on the list? Yeah. Put me on the list. Let them know what it is, what it looks like, how much it is. They're just on there. Like it's like almost like a guarantee that they'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that you can buy that you can't even own it. Ferrari keeps it. So you buy a Ferrari from them and they go, no, you're not allowed to drive. We'll bring it to you once a year and you can drive it and then we'll take it back. Because they can, because like it's also a status thing. Oh, I'm one of 10 people that owns this race version. So it's, it's more, like you said, and then it's the person next to you going, they have their 100th Ferrari, what's going on? You know, and then that's a big knock-on effect. And I've thought about this a lot lately, is like, someone, a friend of mine who did a podcast recently, and she has a lot of stuff around nasal health, and she listens to the podcast, so she knows who she is, Alex. And I was thinking sort of like in sharing something you're interested in or passionate about, while seemingly very small, A, is an indication to people that you can follow through with things that you're passionate about that aren't about, they're about more than just how they appear externally. So you want to pursue something that's real and legitimate. It's an indication that you can also inspire people to do the same thing. So you can inspire people by your effort and your path and what you're passionate about and creative about versus the end goal where you've become so successful that you've got all this money and wealth and external objects. So by sharing the success, but not the success in the look how many Ferraris I've got or how many houses I own, but the success of being yourself and being passionate about what you do and continuing that through the challenges, to me is there's a high value. I find more value from that than the person who's sitting up high and achieve these things and accumulating and doing things because of the status of the brand or what it looks like, not doing because they love it. And it's, you can tell when you talk to someone who loves what they do, because mm-hmm. quite often they think about the financial benefits secondary or the challenges or whatever. It doesn't seem like work. It's something that they're pursuing out of love mm-hmm. and also because they want to help someone. Like I see a lot of people like yourself and people who are in the health field. You're not doing that because it's like you're going to like, it's a financial incentive. It's like you get paid for what you do, but the first goal is to do what your soul wants to do.
It comes from within.
It's not I saw that you can be an influencer in 10 minutes and make $50,000 per post, whatever that shit. Like people just imitate. They start somewhere and they work backwards from that.
Yeah, it's the wrong motive because you actually lose your inspiration after a while because it's such a crazy journey.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so it's just because it's not a rewarding journey. The reward needs to come from within. It needs to be, all right, what I just did now is impacting on my soul.
Yeah.
Like if I do a post, I look at it, yeah, it impacts on my soul because it reflects what I need to explore, yeah. what I need to develop, and I need to develop the strategies how to express it in a way that it fits in with the bigger scheme.
Yeah.
So that means I have to learn all kind of other little tricks in order to actually manifest that. So it all comes, so that means it all connected to this aspect of that mysterious jing that's in the kidney. That is actually this developmental aspect. And that is, in fact, once again, connected to the universe. So that means if we are connected to this jing, we actually got a direct line to the source,
yep.
to God.
Yep.
And then when we develop the soul, our spirit, it's actually directly connected. We got a direct line to the White House.
I don't know if I want to align with that. I don't want to talk to them.
We call it the lighthouse.
The lighthouse is better, and not the White House.
Yeah. So we got a direct line to the origin, to whatever the source is. And that source, then, that information comes from us and influences us in our behavior towards improving the self.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the self get a grip of itself by the exploration of its need to evolve certain things about itself, which comes directly from source, because the jing is the mysterious substance that is a God force.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a God molecule, if you want to call it.
Yeah.
And there's an interesting thing that's like I've been reading today in Africa, they're discovering a new drug that's now pestering the streets. It's called Kusho, Kusho. It's a terrible drug, apparently. But it's primarily derived from skeletal bone, human skeletal bone.
Okay, that's not very nice.
Yeah, yeah. But what I immediately thought about it, they're tapping into the jing because jing gets stored
okay.
to a certain degree in the bones. And so for some...
Marrow particularly? Like in the marrow?
Yeah, in the marrow, yeah. So the buzz they're getting from that drug is actually connected somehow to the jing. So they're tapping into source energy through this because our jing is the source energy is accessible via our bone marrow bones, which is why when we do Tai Chi, how much incredible impact do we have on the balance?
Yeah.
I mean, every Tai Chi practitioner gets bone like steel.
Yeah.
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 It's just the hardening. I remember that when I had that x-ray 10 years ago because I had this excruciating knee pain and they suggested surgery and I had an x-ray. And when I looked at that x-ray, the surgeon said, because I was 55 when that, and he looked at me, I can't believe this, but is the bone density that you have, that's like someone like 30.
Yeah.
And that was like the evidence of chi practice, you know, how the chi practice just strengthens the bone.
Yeah.
And how many times have I, you know, slipped and bit my mountain bike and that all kind of shit, you know, falling off cliffs and things like that. And I thought, oh, this is going to be broken bone, no worries,
yeah.
And got up and bam, back on again,
yeah.
Keep going.
Yep.
So I've seen how through these chi practices, how the bones are impacted on in terms of making them seriously strong and solid. And then at the same time, when there is an impact, they become instant yin or liquid.
Yeah, well, it's funny because you think when you're a kid, the same thing, right? You almost on purpose have, you know, you crash your bike or you fall out of a tree. Mm-hmm. And quite often it's like you're rubber.
Like you just in that moment, yes. Just bounce, yes. You just sort of then bang back again, and then right. You get the steel.
You got shit to do. You keep playing.
Yeah. So you got water, steel.
Yeah.
And that's obviously what chi practices do. And chi practices actually then this constant contraction of and then electric impulse and they have on the bones, which has been through a lab test been proven that chi practices create a high electric current around bones, especially the femur.
Yeah.
So that actually makes you access source energy.
Yeah. Well, I can see that. I've seen evidence of that. I've felt a bit of that, and I've seen it from, you know, McYunjin, Chen Yunjin, in terms of what he does. There's no way, it doesn't seem possible. So even every year I see him, there's something more and more. It's actually difficult now to see his body doing anything other than just being very standing there. And then the force and the energy you can exert is like, I call it, it's like planetary now. Like it's gravitational. Like it's some bizarre feeling. Like you put sort of a hand on you, you feel like someone's put the weight of the earth on you. And the more you try and resist, the worse it gets. And you've been driven like into the ground or something, with him seemingly on the outside doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
So whatever's happening there is it feels like this density. It's more than just his physical stature, his body doing it. And the fluid becoming solid makes tons of sense in martial arts too. If you're very, very rigid and you're trying for a strike or kick or whatever it is, the more likely you're going to get hurt or miss your target or not achieve what you want to achieve. But if you're fluid and then at the last second becomes a different material, if it's water, it becomes steel. It's, you know, Bruce Lee, if water can flow or it can crash. So you water your fluid until the last moment and then it becomes a weapon or dangerous, but it's, and then back to state changing, sort of alchemical, or there are new modern technologies that do this, simulate this, where they can change their structure based on like an electrical charge. So it goes soft and solid again. But the fact that the body can do that is fascinating, that you can actually, like you said, improve that over time, not get worse. We're told like if you don't take your calcium or you drink milk or do this or do that, you're deteriorating. Basically, you're seizing up or you're atrophying, or the less you use something and strengthen it, the more weaker it becomes, which is
great.
But people might read that and go, oh, I've got to drink more milk and go to the gym more often, but that's not really necessarily the
You know, I mean, you know. I'm a big, like, that's why I'm always proposed strength training.
Yeah.
I'm big on strength training. I mean, this is, but what people don't see is that I spend 80% of my training on the flow, internal chi practice, and then the actual strength training is only 20% of my practice.
Yeah.
But there's so much impact in that moment that goes through it that it strengthens the bones and muscles on a level that otherwise 2 hour training would do.
Yeah.
But though I do the 2 hour training, or over 2 hours actually, more than 2 hours, more 3 hours. But that's me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's my dedication. And if I don't do it, I live my life as a no self. Because it's driven from it. I need to do it. I need to research it. So, but the strength training is crucial. I believe it's absolutely essential.
Yeah.
But what I notice is that people purely only focus on strength training without going actually the inner part. That's what I'm always saying over and over. It's not a good idea either.
Yeah.
You know, because you need the inner development first. And the Taoists are very clear about it. They say like external training without internal training leads to depletion. That's not a good idea.
Yeah.
Whereas the internal training is crucial in order to make the external training of value.
Yeah.
What happened then is what they say is when you do the external training, forget about the external and do internal.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. And so what happens now is you, first of all, when you're doing the internal training, you're actually getting, you're becoming one with you, with this source energy that is accessible via the balance. And the more you're going in and relaxing into it, the more you're sinking in. That means the yang and the yin doing its work it's supposed to be doing. That means the more you actually, your awareness merges with this, with the source energy, and you can feel like you're becoming one with the body. And now you're actually in a state of being fluid yin.
Yeah.
And then when I go and use my bar or my weights or my TRX, I'm actually in the state of being fluid within.
Yeah.
And I'm letting the inner work doing the external application.
Yeah.
So it looks like it's an external application, but it's actually internal. But what's doing is now you're taking the whole stress level on your bone marrow, therefore activating source energy on a higher stimulus level, and you're actually gaining more. So I believe that the strength training is like something that we developed in the West and really have got good insight. And I think that the Chinese never really looked into it as much. They're more looked into the internal. And I really believe that it's about East and West coming together.
Yeah.
And if you take the understanding, the knowledge of the Chinese in terms of how they approach inner development and then connect it with what we understand in the West from weight training and strengthening, you combine that, I believe we're taking the whole understanding so far that has been developed over 1,000 years here to a next level.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can do that in 2-hour training, what otherwise would just take 10 hours.
Yeah.
Yes. Because not everyone has got the ability to train hours every day like an Indian would. You know?
Yeah, no.
Not everyone's destined to be a Tai Chi master.
12, 14 hours, and he does other, all sorts of different methods as well. So it's got his own process.
Yeah, yeah.
Which we don't have access to that. That's just his own. And he, like you said, study.
Yeah.
It's study. It's his job to do that.
So
4 hours and not.
We're living in fascinating times because I like, when I do my strength training, I use primarily TRX, which is a total resistance trainer, which was developed by the Navy SEALs.
Yeah.
And the Navy SEALs are profound. They're masters in terms of understanding conditionings. I mean, that's like, as I say, 4 Navy SEALs control 2,000 Taliban.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's about the ratio of what tapping into source energy means.
Yeah.
There's a Taliban are mad people.
Yeah.
There's no connection to the source energy.
Yeah.
It's just all but it's like the random atoms, nucleus and molecules going off.
Yeah. And that's why the 4 of them can that's why they're organized.
Four Navy SEALs.
And like I don't know what the attrition rate is, but per 100 people or 200 people that apply, there's, I mean, I, what the number is crazy, but that start doing that, that make it.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, like, by the time you get to the people who survive the training.
Yeah.
Right? Like, then you're not fucking around. It's unbelievable. It's like the people who are in those sort of special forces units are, it's astonishing what people can accomplish.
Yeah. They have explored, they went into the depths of source energy.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they wouldn't have survived it.
Yeah, I do wonder about how that came. I mean, I don't know enough about how it came about, the training method that they have and design of that and where that, you know, you look at it, what was mixed. Obviously, they were mixing different styles together with different understandings of physiology, but also the use of equipment. And
they're using a lot of Eastern principles. Like, they're using mindfulness. They're using the breathing. They're using the water, air breathing.
Yeah. And then also, like, to be at your absolute best at the worst possible moment.
Yeah.
Right? That's the saying, like, you don't rise to the occasion, you fall to the
where do you tap into when you're your absolute best and your worst moment? When do you tap into it?
Ones at their worst and going chaotic, you're like the most calm.
Yeah, that's when your strength comes forward.
Yeah.
You know, when all the shit hits the fan, now I'll feel myself.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, right? Because you think, and I've listened to quite a few podcasts with Tim Kennedy, who's not SEALs, he's special forces, I believe, sniper.
Yeah.
And I listened to like a 6-hour podcast with him. Because I'd heard him in bits and pieces, but I hadn't actually heard his whole story before. And you think, like, there's in no way is he excited about it. Like he said, the war is the worst thing ever. Like war is terrible. Like,
yeah.
No, you look at on the outside and he has like, you know, he has a gun and he has shooting schools and he also has like survival schools. And that you might look at people and go, oh, he's just a gun nut and he's a fanatic or whatever. People, you know, he's right wing and that. But you look at actually what his core principles are. And it's not at all about that. It's like he's doing what he's good at. He's a, you know, his father was in law enforcement, his brother's in law enforcement. He's raised to protect people, you know, to look after people. And as a protector and as someone who's got this goal, it's like that's where he's clearly his path. And why he's become so good at it is like he's driven by more than just the external, what it looks like on the outside, or trying to be a hero or gung-ho things that we always get, I think, compounded upon people in those sort of situations.
Yeah.
And cops and military. It's quite often it's like we're willing to be proud of those people, like veterans, but then when the job's done, it's like no one cares anymore, you know. You know, there's a lot of disrespect for those people who go through that. But a lot of them, especially in those situations where they're so highly trained, it's beyond just wanting to have shoot or, you know, go to war. So they don't even want that necessarily, but there's something else. You see that something else, that spirit, especially when you hear him talk about his experiences. And now he's like going to education, starting schools, to teaching like kids.
Yeah, when he talks, you can sense he's stepping to source.
And absolutely, it's not just, yeah. It's not like he saw something and wanted to imitate it. It's kind of part of his core.
He's truly himself.
Exactly, yeah.
There's no self.
No, that's why it's so great. And yeah. You hear him speak and watch and follow his Instagram and stuff, and he's just being himself, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But he's also able to make the right choices and do the right thing. And he's got this whole program he's part of, which is Save Our Allies, which is when, you know, people end up in war zones, he goes and gets them out of these war zones, American citizens.
Yeah.
And then
when the Americans fled
Afghanistan.
Yeah. Afghanistan, yeah. And they left all these people stranded there.
Yeah, well, the informant.
And he got in with a couple of his mates and then helped like 2,000
people. 12,000. He coordinated a lot of groups of people. Cool. So not just him, but a lot of groups of Save Our Allies. And he coordinated the extraction of 12,000
people. And the government didn't want him to do that.
Yeah, no, exactly. And this is the thing, too, is like patriotism and, you know, they'll be the first people to talk about how the government's let them down. The U.S. is falling apart. Like, they're not blindly patriotic, but they are in the sense that that's what they were trained to do, and they want to help the people next to them, and they want to do the right thing and help. Like, I just think it's a really fascinating topic because it'd be so easy to write people off like this, who are crazy or this or that or far right or, and I think when you hear these people talk, especially on like a podcast or something, it's like anybody who's been canceled over the past few years, the opportunity to hear them talk, you know pretty quickly if they're full of shit or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, we met like Peter McCulloch in person, and there's no sense when you meet him, you instantly know this person is real.
He's connected.
Even just getting near him, it felt like, oh, this is not a person who's just talking, or he's not like,
he's not a selfie throwing swaying influencer.
No, or saying it sounds good, or he's being paid to say it, or
became a hero.
Yeah,
because I believed in the cause. So I didn't focus on becoming a hero. He didn't put the hero position in the first place.
No. And he
acted on his drive from within.
And he did this.
He knew what he was doing. How does it impact on my soul?
Yeah.
He questioned himself. Yeah. If I follow this mandate, does it impact on my soul?
Yeah.
What about if I oppose this mandate and help those unfortunate people? How would that impact on my soul?
Yeah.
And he could sense in that moment that it's far better to impact positively on your soul than you're neglecting your soul. So he's one of those examples. And then obviously the result of that is he tapped into himself, and then the source energy moved through him, and he became almost like a realized being, because when you met him, you're just like, wow,
it was pretty.
I felt like I'm in the presence of some sort of like master.
I was surprised. I didn't expect it to get that sense. Yeah,
and that's because he didn't give in to the narrative.
Yeah,
and he sacrificed his status.
Yeah. Yes, but yes. In this one mood.
He lost his income by the time we saw him speaking live. I mean, he was in debt. He lost all the money.
Yeah, to choose a different path. Yeah.
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 It's just like he lost all his status.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's obviously what really brings forward the meat in a person. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to really to get connected to it. So this is obviously the interesting thing is that this Jing that is responsible to develop the self so that you are your true self rather than a no self. And that Jing, that is your power source, but it's also under the influence of fear. So when fear is about, then it cuts you off from tapping into this source energy. into the gym.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably what they do with the Navy SEAL. They're why they're so, the ones who get through this process and come out at the other end have got this enormous sense of self.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they actually were facing all those fears and had to dig into something that in this chaotic circumstance had to be the best self. And there was nothing else other than to dig deep.
Yeah.
And when you dig deep, where do you go into the kidney.
Yeah.
Because in Chinese medicine, this jing is actually the darkness in yourself. Not darkness in dark spirit. In darkness, it's hidden. It's a mystery.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's a mystery. So because when you are faced with fearful situation, what happens is life becomes a mystery because you don't know in that moment what you can rely on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like all trust just goes.
Yeah.
And I listened to my uncle and my father in the Second War when they were full on in this combat situation. Like my uncle, he was one of those these crazy SS guys who just stick themselves into holes and waiting for the Russian tanks to appear.
Yeah.
And then he climbed up on the Russian tanks and put the grenades on.
Right.
You know, they sort of stuff them.
Yeah, takes them.
So he had to be, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like he said in that moment. Oh, it sounds all very good when the intent is set. Yeah, I'm going to blow those things
up. Yeah.
So you go there because usually the night before you drink lots and get charged up. And then you just go into the field and you just, because there's only a few of them. And in that moment, there's no one there you can rely on.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you see those tanks. You hear the tanks before you see them. That's a scary moment. So the fear that comes up in that moment, because those army tanks, you can't see for a while.
Yeah.
But the noise,
sure,
is full on.
Yep.
And because there's not only one.
Right.
There's a several.
Yep.
Yeah. And so then you just, obviously the fear comes in. So obviously what happens in the moment is you have to dig very, very, very deep in order to actually trust. Yeah. And that source energy.
Yeah. Which but then is training, right? That's not just a training. It's not a, like, oh, I'm just trying to be afraid, a mental process. If you're trying to do it in the moment, it's not going to work. Like, clearly has to come from,
but it requires a fear also
to activate it
order to get, yeah, it requires a fear. This is the interesting thing.
Okay, what that means, that
this is why the physical world is essential. The setup of the physical world that has so much uncertainties is actually essential in order for us to tap into the source energy in order to create ourselves.
Yeah.
Because you never know of the outcome. So if you opt out for security,
yeah,
what happens at that moment, you're actually cheating on your soul.
Yeah.
Yes? Because you're actually not allowing to dig deep into source energy.
Yeah.
Because instead, you're giving into the security of the altar and then you feel safe. So the fear factor is actually essential in order to dip in.
Yeah.
And my uncle, he said it a few times, like in that moment when he just realized he had to dig in, there was nothing else. He said there was always something coming towards him. There was always his presence suddenly.
Yeah.
And so he never was a spiritual person, but he said the war made him spiritual.
But is that something you'd expect to hear?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So he said, like, because there was too many situations where he was faced now with that suddenly an non-ordinary experience
took place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nims Purger, who did the 14 peaks. Where he climbed the 14 tallest peaks in the record.
Yeah.
His story of being Special Forces, SAS, was very similar to that. There was these moments where he's like, I got shot at from a rooftop and the bullet hit the part of the rifle. The only area could have hit him without killing him. He fell off the rooftop. And so there were these moments in combat that were, he should have died or something should have happened. And there was almost like an intervention where he's like, he was obviously, you know, he's like Nepalese. So there's obviously a spiritual practice into that, right? But he's obviously, as a soldier, you're not really thinking about that. They said there were these times when it was like almost like you were supposed to be in that situation, that exact moment for that to happen. But you don't really associate that often with war, like spiritual awareness or enlightenment or...
Yeah.
But you hear it all the time. Like people who, like you said, the Four Seals that take down 2,000, you know, enemy or whatever, those stories like the Battle of Britain or when it shouldn't have happened, it shouldn't have gone a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, my uncle, when he got into he became... the Leibstandarte SS, Waffen SS, which is the black uniform, those like highly trained soldiers under Hitler. He joined for status.
Yeah.
And he was the man. I mean, he was like 6'4", blonde, blue eye, big, you know, wherever he went, he's a dude, yeah. And so he fit the exact picture of the status
Yeah.
of that time. But there was never a thought about spirituality.
Right, no.
If someone would have said it about,
yeah,
like, talking about some sort of, like, chi or
yeah,
Buddha or, yeah, stuff and that.
Yeah.
You know, this. And however, then the situation where the fear was overwhelming and where he had to dig deep, it is then when he discovered that presence came through to him.
Right, yeah.
And then after the war, when he was finished, when he escaped, his life changed totally.
Yeah.
And he went to, he was one of those German SS who then escaped to Argentina.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he went to lived in the jungle with the Indios for 3 years. Didn't want to see a white man.
Yeah.
Because he was, the war really completely made him disillusioned about what the physical life had to offer.
Did anyone know who the last people he talked to who knew what he was doing there? Like, do you know what the last thing where he was at before he died in terms of what he was doing or what he...
No, he was obviously in Russia.
Yeah.
And then he got captured.
Yeah.
And then my father and another guy helped him to escape, which is a long story in itself.
Sure, I bet.
So he got out. And so they escaped. So they escaped to Italy and then hopped on the boat in Italy and then arrived in Argentina. Okay. And then as soon as he arrived on land, he went straight away for the Indios, yeah, for the jungle,
yeah,
because he had the survival skills.
Sure.
I mean, that's what they learned, yeah. And the Indios were then met him, saw in him that warrior.
Yeah.
Someone who just was accountable for himself.
Yeah.
They didn't see someone who was like whatever race affiliated with.
Yeah.
They just saw the person.
Yeah.
They saw the self.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they saw there was someone committed to the self. And obviously those guys in the jungle obviously were also committed to themselves, to this. And
yeah,
so it became like this interaction. And he learned the language a little bit. He loved it.
Yeah.
But he learned, I mean, he took ayahuasca and all kind of stuff.
Sure.
So he was into it before. When I was a hippie and talked to him about mescaline, he said,
yeah,
I've done all that.
Yeah. Right.
I've done it in the jungle. And,
yeah, okay.
You know, there's them. And when I talked about opium, when I kept to the prisoner of war.
Right. Crazy stories. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. Because obviously when you're in this sort of situation and someone offers you a moment of escape, you obviously go for it. You don't ask any question if it's legal or not.
Yeah. Probably not. Yeah. You're already in prison. Yeah. Are you in trouble for this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the interesting thing is that obviously it's the fear factor is essential in order to tap into the
soul. Yeah, no, I've never thought of it that way, but that makes a lot of sense. It's necessary as an activator, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, absolutely. You know what you can do, because it's like the idea now that we need external security or someone's going to help us or come in to save us, or that someone else will tell us what to do in an emergency or in a bad situation. You feel like that's being more and more pushed as the only way.
Because I believe there's a spiritual awakening now on global scale.
Yeah.
Because you can't actually wait for the government to save you anymore. You can't wait for the politician to save you. I mean, they're just like a bunch of puppets. I mean, I look at them, you're just going to laugh.
Yeah.
You can't take them serious anymore.
Yeah.
And now that the most MPs in Germany are smoking hashish all day and smoking pot and getting stoned all day.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
It's yes. And then talking about pre-war rather than
war. Yeah.
Yeah. No idea what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Because they're obviously so removed from life. They don't even know what a conflict means.
Yeah, it sounds like pre-workout, like creatine or something. Oh, we're loading up before the actual workout. Yeah, we're just taking our stuff.
Yeah, it's just like a fad. Yeah, let's talk about the war. Yeah, we're gonna arm up, so when Russia attacks us, so we're going to attack them before they attack us. So it's a psychosis. Yeah, it's a full-on psychosis that goes on there. And obviously, that's a result of obviously not being connected to source energy anymore, yeah? And so we can see this now, and more people, like when I talked to my sister a couple of weeks ago, like she just said, it's beyond madness now, it's a new level.
Right.
Like where the parliament makes absolutely no sense anymore.
Well, maybe it never did. But, it's always level. Yeah, yeah, I know. But it's always at a level of like.
Look at the back, there were some great guys.
Sure.
I mean, look at Robert John. Look at Kennedy.
Yeah.
Bobby Kennedy.
Oh, no, he's incredible.
He's like,
we don't really deserve.
He's a politician. I reckon it's him.
Yeah. Yeah. Him and Tulsi Gabbard as well. She's not running for president. She's incredible. But him.
So there is someone there who would be the ideal president for America.
Yeah. I mean, he's just.
But instead, they're going for the madness.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you got to see it through, hey?
It's like. The Trump Biden is both. It's just madness on each opposite scale.
No, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It is. I mean, yeah.
So you either get the left madness or you get the right madness. Yeah. Either way, you will get mad.
You get mad, yeah. And the person who makes the most sense is the outlier, and people calling him crazy. He's a conspiracy theorist and anti-vaxxer, all these pejoratives that if you listen to him talk, you know, he's not any of those things. He's actually, everything he says, there's complete rationale and research and experience behind it.
Yeah.
Like, not only direct research, but experience, but also, like, his job is to research and write books on legal.
Yeah, but look at the fear that he deals with. He kept on going.
Yeah.
He's connected to himself.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And he's still being denied Secret Service.
Well, look, he practices hard.
Yeah.
I mean, look at his body. The guy's 68. Look at that.
I just look at his eyes. You just need to look at his eyes. You're like, it's something
so crazy.
Crazy. Not crazy, but it's incredible. Something really otherworldly there.
I want to see Trump and Kennedy in a ring.
Well,
let's sort it out the old way.
Yeah.
The old school.
Yeah. That's pretty good.
Forget the political debate. Put him in the ring.
I don't think Biden could even get up the stairs into the ring from that point, you know.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. He probably will last a second.
No, I don't think he can even find the arena.
Yeah.
Pretty lost.
The only problem with that is you put Putin in there, he's got a problem.
Him and Kennedy, I think Kennedy would beat him. But that is...
Maybe meanwhile, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Kennedy's stronger than him now.
I think so.
But back in the day, I think Putin, But he apparently he's not that healthy anymore.
No, he didn't look that healthy in that interview. He didn't look as healthy as he used to, but...
I mean, he's probably another of those... I mean, it was his interview with Tucker Carlson was great, but still, he's a madman.
He's still mad, yeah. But I just think it was so fascinating.
He's a very interesting madman. It was like... A madman will make sense.
Totally. Like I mentioned this one before, the Banksy's work, and he did this whole exhibition where he did these installations in New York, and the reaction to it was more important than what he did. And I think the Putin interview, the most remarkable thing was the reaction. Before the interview even aired, the reaction was like as if it had happened.
Yeah.
And all these fucktards in the media were like, oh, God, this and that. And I'm like, this hasn't happened yet.
Mm.
Someone you don't like is going to interview someone else you don't like.
Yeah.
That's all you know.
Yeah,
and then the interview came out, and it was pretty reasonable, and it was a lecture about Russian history, which was fascinating. Like, clearly knows what he's talking about. But all the things they were, like, you know, beating the drum about didn't happen, but didn't matter, because they'd already had their fear reaction and made everyone else afraid, and all the people who just still think the media is real, you know, react in the same way. It's all predictable, right? The whole thing is predictable now in its insanity. The reaction is like, oh, of course they're going to bring
it. Yeah, this is why I believe, but to me, it looks like, every time I talk to my friends in Germany, I say, look, because they're scared.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, even Joe Rogan on the podcast said, I'm scared. I want Jesus to come back. And when he said that, someone took that and put it on the Christian side. And now everyone's like, wow.
He's got a new market now.
You just made it as a joke.
He's probably just added 2 million new followers in the podcast by saying that.
I think they're starting to realize there's something not quite in line with their understanding of what the second coming of Christ is about. But obviously I hear this often. Yeah, I mean, here in Australia, we don't get that much. Yeah, we don't have that fear.
What? Oh, right.
Yeah, we don't have that fear. But when you talk to friends in Germany, there's a lot of them.
It's a bit of a, but we should be here.
Yeah. And when you talk to America, they're scared.
Yeah, yeah. I think people here probably should be, but there's no point in making them afraid if they're not already afraid. So I think people like, you maybe should be a little more, I think you're concerned.
Too consumed in the mortgage crisis, too consumed on what's got, you know.
But what's caused that? Like, this is the hell.
Yeah.
The thing that we see is being very obvious of what caused it is people are still in a bit of a bubble about what caused it. And it's like, oh, petrol prices are high because of the war in the Ukraine. I'm like, that's not really what happened. But if you think that's true, like, sorry that you think that, but it's not what happened. The reason why we have a cost of living crisis is $500 or $600 billion spent on COVID crisis in Australia.
Mm.
That's the current, maybe conservative. Like, that's a obscene amount of money. Not to mention all other, you know, I don't think you can, it's probably a trillion, I'm guessing, but it's an amount that's put
it's
back.
Money.
Right. So insane, crazy. So it's all these words, mad, crazy, insane. No, it's not working.
Yeah, you couldn't have seen that like 20 years ago. No. There's no way would it was that the government would have spent like hundreds of billions of dollars on like, on something that's not proven.
Not that quick. Not that effective. Not that quickly. How did that happen?
Yeah, how sudden.
Like,
yeah.
Within months.
And how sudden everyone was suddenly caught off and paid off and this, the corruption so sudden.
Yeah.
And so that's obviously where people now have no choice other than to go within.
Yeah.
Because the fear is actually the key to get into the gym.
Yeah.
And then to dig deep and then to find a way how to connect, and then the information will come through, and then to just act on it.
Yep. Yep. That's,
it will not work without fear.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because I just watched the new Dune movie. The second Dune movie, which is pretty amazing. It's hard to even, I have to watch it again. It was just so much happening. But there's a saying out of that book that says fear is the mind killer. But maybe it's more like fear is the soul igniter or something, you know? Like in terms of like, that's putting fear as this negative thing. It's going to kill, you know, kill. And it does, if you don't, if you let it, it will. If you...
Jing is the power that is essential for developing the self. But Jing is also the power that will regulate protein production. So what we spoke about in the beginning, for example, all the vaccine damages, they can all be regulated with Chinese medicine because Chinese medicine focuses on the Jing because I had quite a few vaccine-damaged clients over the time. And I focus on Jing, I focus on the kidney.
Yeah.
And I get lots and lots of herbs and lots of breathing, lots of Qigong. Obviously, the herbs are crucial. Yes. And after a while, that information that is in the body in terms of this proliferation of that information to produce protein that aren't belonging to the body is now more and more suppressed.
Yeah.
And eventually it has got no need to exist and then it disappears.
Yeah.
So that the good thing about it is that vaccine damages can be easily healed.
Yeah.
But they require, easily is probably the wrong word, but it's you can heal it and it requires a departure from the old lifestyle. Yeah. And it requires, okay, I've got to get into digging deep into the kidney. And because in there is a Jing that then actually provides the information to correct this, whatever those patterns are that John Ryan talks about in the Brett Weinstein podcast, which I tell everyone, you've got to listen to it.
Yeah.
And then you really just get, keep in mind that their Chinese medicine got solutions to it because this is obviously where Brett Weinstein, those people, they don't interview Chinese practitioners or the practitioners of Chinese medicine.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't go there. So we only hear one side of the coin, which is essential for them to bring that forward because they're essential for the awakening process.
I think I think even the guy, John Ryan, said at some point in the interview, he's like, you know, we can dwell on that or we can just move forward and get on with something. And when he said that, I'm like, that's what we need. That's the getting on with it and doing something about it is more than just speaking out about it or highlighting it. It's what actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that would be the next stage will be where people like Brett Weinstein and this Peter McCullough who started going against the narrative. And then as what, in their words, they're developing the tribe.
Yeah.
And now more and more people will appear.
Yeah.
And the group that has been neglected so far is the group of those who are really focusing on the Chinese medicine.
Yeah.
But not the Western Chinese medicine.
Yeah.
The Western Chinese medicine is academic.
Yeah, but
it's bullshit. It's bullshit. You look at that, I go, whoa.
Yeah, but you saw them more crumble under the COVID hysteria. They just backed off on their own what they should have known to be true.
I'm talking about the Chinese medicine. Yeah. The original idea of the Chinese medicine is if you are a practitioner of the Chinese medicine, that means your job is to wake up at 4 a.m.
Yeah, okay.
And you do your 3-hour, 4-hour Qigong.
But other than you.
Then you sit down and have a congee, a solid breakfast, in order to ground that energy that you receive. Now you're going out and treat your clients. Then by the time it comes lunch, around 1:30, 2 o'clock, your job is to rejuvenate yourself and have a big meal. And then in the afternoon, you do research and study. And then by 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, you're just going back and do your Qigong and your Tai Chi and your martial art. And then you take some herbs, have a glass of wine, chill out, go to bed. Yeah. So that is the path of a Chinese doctor.
Yeah.
That has been the path in ancient times. It is because of that lifestyle that they discovered the Chinese medicine, because no one gave them a book.
No.
More, you know, the original Chinese doctors were out there 4 o'clock in the morning and were just knocking at heaven's door over and over through the Qigong practices and just asking questions and didn't give in.
Yeah.
Not knowing what they were doing, they just transcended the fear, they dig deep.
Mm.
They were like the Navy SEAL. They kept digging, kept digging, kept digging, and putting themselves in incredible situations of stress in order to find where is it.
Yeah.
And then explored it. And like I studied under one of those Chinese doctors. He was 80 by the time he came to Australia. I was a student and he came to visit us. And like he talked about how when he studied China, when he studied Chinese medicine, a lot of the acupuncturists were doing 4 hour Qigong before they went to the hospital.
Yeah.
So they worked in hospitals and treated 60, 80 patients and did an enormous help. They helped the humanity.
Yeah.
But they had a really dedicated practice.
Yeah. It's like, how else can you do it, really?
Yeah. And they said it over and over. Like, I remember that when I talked to Zhang Man, like lots of us in Brisbane know Zhang Man.
Yeah, she's
one
amazing.
Of the best acupuncturists in Australia. And she said over and over to me, she said, you cannot understand Chinese medicine without Tai Chi. You cannot understand Chinese medicine without you have living the lifestyle. It's not from the book. The book cannot give you the understanding. The book is the structure.
Yeah.
The understanding comes from the application.
Yeah.
And this is what I mean when I talk about Chinese medicine to the rescue. I mean, those people, when Brett Weinstein, John Ryan, those people that need to open up to those practitioners of Chinese medicine will live the lifestyle.
Yeah.
Would dedicate themselves to qi development every day. We'll have to 4 hour practice, 5 hour practice. We'll live it like fully dedicated. And those people do exist. Yeah. And their people have an understanding of how to work with Jing in order to regulate the protein proliferation and therefore to control the pattern on a level that no one else can do.
Well, they should give you a call then. Yeah. give us a call because we can help. Yeah.
Yeah. And come over, do some Qigong with me.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you some fun.
That's right.
Show you some real Fa Jing.
Yeah. So don't be afraid, but use fear to your advantage.
Yeah.
That's the way to end that. That's cool.
Yeah. So face the fear, dig deep, let the source energy come through you and become your true self.
True self.
So you're not the no self.
Not your no self, true self.
Yeah.
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 Till next time.
Yeah.